Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode number 18 of Bitter and Fertiles. Wow, I can't believe it. I'm Christy.
And I'm Shelley.
And this week, Mo is out sick. She is sorry to have missed us, unfortunately, but she needs to get better. So we'll pick up with Mo next week because we've got a few things we need to talk about. But instead, what we figured we would do is we would just jump right in with our special guest for the week. What do you think, Shelley?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, good. So our special guest today is CDG. She is a blogger, and her blog's title is Adventures in Infertility and Divorce Land. And hi, CDG. And I'm going to let her give you, all of you, her infertility resume. So shoot.
Okay. Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. So my story is a little bit unique, I think. I got married when I was 30 years old. It was actually 5 days before my 30th birthday. And we started trying to have a baby maybe about a year and a half after that. So I was 32, not even 32, never dreamed that this would sort of happen. And, you know, many years later, I sort of find myself in a very unique spot. But what wound up happening to us was, you know, very typical story of largely unexplained infertility, although I did have a number of like mild medical conditions that we found along the way. Mm-hmm. I'm a carrier for the Fragile X gene mutation. I have some mild endometriosis, which they eventually found via laparoscopy. Mm-hmm. I have a blood clotting disorder and basically crappy eggs. I've done a ridiculous amount of fertility treatments. I think that if I count it all, I've done something like 7 IUIs, some medicated, some not medicated, and probably 7 IVF cycles.
Wow.
I think one or two didn't have a transfer, and then there was one frozen transfer mixed in there. But there was a lot of treatment. I was actually able to get pregnant once. Remarkably, it was after my 4th IVF cycle, and it was a natural pregnancy. Wow. And unfortunately for me, we had a ton of complications in the pregnancy and lost that baby around the 16th week of pregnancy, 15th week, something in that range.
I'm so sorry. I really am so sorry.
Well, thank you. And I think for me, that was the beginning of my end. That was in 2010, but I did a number of fertility treatments after that. But I think that was very draining emotionally, draining physically, and I really started losing my energy in terms of being able to, you know, get it up to do a treatment cycle. I would do them, but it was hard to be hopeful. It was hard to be energetic. And where I am today is sometime around this time last year, I started experiencing a lot of problems in my marriage. Okay. If I would be honest, it probably was around the time of that baby loss was when things started to really fall apart. And at this point in time, I am a separated woman. So we've been living apart since the summer, and I'm sort of trying to put the pieces back together. I'm trying to think what else is part of my history. That's probably the nuts and bolts of my journey.
Yeah, it's a lot. we were talking briefly before about the fact that just going through infertility is a lot. And then getting diagnosed slowly over time, it sounds like with all these other things, is also a lot,
yeah,
too. I mean, being told you have you're a carrier for Fragile X, it can for some people be really hard. Other people, you know, kind of go through it. But then on top of that, endometriosis and blood clotting and other things like,
yeah,
that. I mean, it's intimidating. Losing a baby is life altering. Now your marriage, having your marriage dissolve and having to basically start over.
Yeah, it's been a lot of loss, I think. And, you know, I think one of the things that I've learned is that it's really easy to blame all the problems on fertility or on treatments and everything. And I think that one of the things that I talk about, especially with my own therapist, is how infertility is sort of a big magnifying glass. It seems to take whatever problems that any marriage would have, and of course there's no perfect relationship, and put a huge magnifying glass on it. So it just erupts, and it's so much bigger than it would be under that kind of stress. And I think for us, you know, I know there's no real average fertility journey,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, I always wonder, even myself, you know, if we had something that resolved within like a 2-year time span, what would have happened? And, you know, In this case, it's been something like 5-6 years in the making. So it's a longer period of time than I think is normal to go through infertility and not have a resolution, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is definitely a lot. One of the things I am going to emphasize, and we will put a link up for CDG's blog, is that despite all this, you are really doing, I mean, I've been reading your blog, and it's been really impressive to, and inspirational, actually, to see what you've been doing during this time, especially with going through a separation, having your life turn completely upside down, and still the steps you've taken to really take care of yourself. You've written about your ex-husband, and you're not villainizing him, which is so tempting to do. And it's really been good for me as I've been going through this, because it's really helped me assess with my own relationship, like, where am I at? What do I want out of it? What do I need to do to take care of myself? And the truth is that as people are going through this journey, a lot of people don't do that. They just assume that if you get to baby, everything will be fine.
And I think I certainly had that that attitude at a period of time. I remember at the very end of the marriage, I was really pushing to do something like the last IVF cycle. We oddly had some insurance coverage we finally got, and I had some frozen embryos, and I really wanted to do it, and thinking, oh, it's okay that we're fighting on barely speaking. Like, we'll figure this out after the baby comes. And I think it was actually my soon-to-be ex-husband who just couldn't do it. And I think ultimately at the time I was so angry at him for that. But I think in the end he probably was right that it's certainly not something that fixes it. And I think we all have this fantasy that once you get pregnant, all the problems go away, or as if it's only the fertility's fault. And I think that it just, you know, once they're out there, it's kind of hard to go backwards in some ways.
Yeah. So what, I mean, we definitely should talk about this just in general more, but I mean, what are some of the resources that you were finding along the way just to be able to maintain something in the lines of sanity along the way?
Absolutely.
You talked about a therapist, which I think is great.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about me as a person is I'm actually a therapist for a profession. So that was interesting too, to like keep myself sane and take care of my patients at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I knew that therapy was going to be essential for me. And ironically, my Fragile X diagnosis kind of came before the infertility. Mm-hmm. And once that kind of came down, I had this sense that maybe this wouldn't be the easiest road and this was a big transition and that I should probably start therapy even if I could get pregnant easily. So I've been with my therapist at this point in time my entire fertility journey, which is fascinating because she can kind of really remember what I was like in the beginning and give me some like reality checks. So that's one of the first things I would recommend. And my therapist is actually a fertility therapist. She has adopted children herself. She'd gone through IVF. She knows the drill. And so, you know, sometimes she was a little bit part teacher, part therapist, but mm-hmm. it was always really reassuring to me that she knew what I was going through and understood. And I didn't have to explain a lot of the terms, you know, if I said, some kind of medication or that I am doing like a Lupron cycle, she knew exactly what I was talking about. And that, I think, is really helpful.
And I'm going to agree with you, and I'm going to actually stress that a lot too. So when I started therapy for all this, we initially started out with somebody that didn't have any experience with infertility. Uh-huh. And she was great as far as general anxieties, other things along those lines. But I still remember the day being in her office and telling her about how I was grieving over the fact that I just couldn't get pregnant. And she looked at me and she said, oh, don't worry about it. You just need to relax. And I realized as I was sitting there and having to explain it to her, and she like, and you could see a light bulb went on when she was like, oh, you're talking about grief. And it was like, oh my God, I can't do this. Yeah. I can't spend the next however amount of time trying to educate my therapist on top of everything. So we've actually had Dee on this program to talk a little bit. It took me a long time to find my current therapist who I love, but I agree with you. Not having to explain the emotions, the treatments, the hell, other things like that is so critical. And it's so it sounds like did were you able to find your therapist right away, or was that a
Yeah,
hard
I
time?
mean, I'm pretty lucky. I live in New York City, so there's a therapist on every corner here. I don't know if it's just the New York City culture where there's twins everywhere, and I think there's a lot of women here seem to wait to have children. So I think fertility issues have been really prevalent for a long time. So it was not hard to find a therapist here, and not hard to find one that was a fertility specialist. But I do know that Resolve certainly has a therapist listing for, you know, people who specialize in fertility counseling. And I know they break it down by region, so that's certainly a good resource. But yeah, I know it must be very challenging if the general practitioner, I never even had that experience, and I almost couldn't imagine it. It's a very unique little thing that I don't think people who either haven't lived it themselves or haven't treated a lot of patients would understand how to go about it. So.
Right. And I actually, it's funny, I've met women out here, so I'm in Seattle, who have actually said that they refuse to recommend infertility patients to people for therapy unless they know for a fact that practitioner is either adopted or been through this journey in some way. Simply because of the fact that they say it's so difficult to understand unless you've really been through it or have experienced it in some way that the likelihood you're gonna fuck it up and tell the patient
Absolutely.
something is just huge.
So
So
CGD, are you considering going into like a specialty in infertility now that you've been through it?
it's so funny that you say that. I've been actually thinking about that for a really long time. I have a few patients of mine, and it's not what I do at this point, and it sort of happened just by accident that a few of my patients had come in. You know, one of them was an older patient, came back years later having, you know, struggled with fertility. I had a patient who had a miscarriage during the course of our treatment. So it's happened sort of by accident, and at this point in time, I don't feel ready to do it. My own history feels a little too fresh, and I don't exactly know where my child's coming from. I know it's coming, I just don't know where. So I kind of view this as a one day down the road thing, but you know, just having being a therapist and having a private practice already, and then having this personal experience, it kind of feels like I have to take this knowledge at some point in time and like put it to good use. So that is my long-term goal, but I think I need a few years to kind of get myself
Process.
together. Yeah, exactly.
And give
Yeah,
yourself a
that's, you
chance to
know,
heal.
there's that fine line between being able to have that the therapy distance and being too involved. And I think at this point in time, I'm a little too in
Too
it with
fresh.
myself. Exactly.
No, I hear you. I do. So, and I wanna talk a little bit about where you're at right now with your journey in just a little bit. But before we go there, since we're on the topic of therapy, did you and E do anything along the lines of couples counseling, or did you look into it?
We did, and arguably, I think we did it way too late. So, you know, we both did individual therapy for a while, and I think that was helpful. And eventually, you know, towards the end, we certainly did couples therapy. I personally think we did it too late. You know, hindsight, of course, is 2020, and it's so hard to know. But I think that I started to feel like we were on separate pages. You know, a good year and a half before we actually were able to enter into couples therapy. And I think that, you know, as a therapist, one of the things that they teach you is that most couples enter into therapy like 2 years too late or something like that.
Oh,
That
wow.
they wait until it's like erupting before they start to think about it. And that's, you know, there's very little a therapist is going to be able to do. Unfortunately for us, I mean, I think we had a great therapist. I think she really helped take a lot of the, you know, helped us boil down what we were trying to say to each other and communicate better. And frankly, what I think she did is help us separate without killing each other. One of the things I'm actually quite proud of is that neither, you know, it's not a contentious divorce. Neither one of us have been hateful towards the other. And, you know, I give the therapist a lot of credit for that because she was really able to like help us do that in a way that was as adult and as amicable as possible. But, you know, I almost think that fertility doctors or reproductive endocrinologists, they need to be recommending couples therapy like way
Oh,
before.
I agree.
Yeah, something like as soon as you start doing, after your first failed IVF cycle, it needs to be a
Oh,
requirement.
I think even before the IVF cycle, I'll be honest, I think it should be the second you walk in the door and are starting to do that workup, people should be in therapy. And it's funny you bring it up because so my husband Gray and I have been in couples counseling now, I'd say for at least like the last 7 months. And
Oh,
when
that's
we
great.
went in, I agree with you. We both went in based on the recommendation of my therapist saying, you guys need this. And we were kind of looking at one another and thinking, no, we're fine. And we had no idea how bad we were. And I know for a fact that we probably should have been in a hell of a lot earlier than we were, based on how much it's helped. But I didn't know 2 years. I never would have guessed that.
I mean, that's what I don't know that there's actual research on that, but I know I've taken a bunch of couples therapy classes and that's what they sort of say. And I think for me, it was easy to get kind of cocky, like, oh, I'm a therapist, I know what to do. And, but that didn't really help our situation. I think one of the things that I know I did that contributed to the ending of a marriage was that it became so hard for me to let go the question of like, what are we going to do next? That I basically badgered my husband on a maybe daily basis, because I just couldn't settle myself. He didn't have an answer for me, so I just kept asking the question as if it was going to change it. And I think that, there's so much anxiety and infertility that it's just so hard to not have the answers in this big unknown kind of quest that you're in. But, I think that the other thing I think that happens is that clearly there's male factor infertility. And while that wasn't my story, I still think even in that case, the burden is on the woman. And I don't really think the men or partners understand what we're experiencing. And that was something really, really, I think, challenging was no matter how hard I tried, my soon-to-be ex-husband had a very hard time understanding where I was coming from, in terms of, how hard it was for me to be around other mothers or women who were mothers, and just how awful I felt on the medication. I mean, it was just really a real challenge to get him to really understand that.
Right. And I completely agree with you. I mean, it's a life crisis. We
Absolutely.
had a plan, and then all of a sudden things are not going the way you expect, and then you're watching other people around you have things go the way they expect, and it's hard. And I agree with you. I think inherently men and women are on very different pages with this process, and then just as, people are in general on very different pages in this process,
Absolutely.
which is why we need help. And I think what you're bringing up, which is so important, is that usually by the time we're seeking help, we are so far past the point that, I mean, we are definitely in crisis and really needing to do it. And
No
so,
question.
yeah, so it's important. It really is. And it's hard because one of the things that I encounter a lot with people is that when I bring this up, it seems like people take it as if I'm somehow attacking them. You need counseling is a way of saying you can't handle it, hence you need to do something versus sitting down and saying, it's not that you're not handling it, it's that there's something going on, and if you don't deal with it now, there will be a point where you can't handle it. And it's even, the fact that you ended up having to go through a divorce, which is, I'm very sorry for that too. The thing that was still so impressive to me, and this explains it, is how well you handled that process. I mean, you really did. Like, you were writing about being able to meet with your ex, meeting with E, and sitting down and doing lunch and talking about things very amicably and talking about, very rationally, where you were angry, but you weren't laying all the blame on him. And it floored me. It was just, I've never, ever seen a separation go like that at all. And it was really amazing to watch, because it wasn't that you guys weren't sad about it. It was just that you were handling it in a way that I think was probably the most healthy way of handling it that I think I've ever seen.
Well, one of the things I think, I mean, first of all, thank you. And I'm sure there were moments where I was well less rational than my blog probably makes it out to be. I've, many crying fits and screaming and yelling did occur a little bit.
Oh,
But
it's gonna.
Absolutely. And I think that ultimately it was once I realized that it was a relationship that I wasn't going to get what I needed from in my life from, it was all the little things that I think couples will fight about, who gets this television, just felt so unimportant that I'd rather give the TV to him than have to either call an attorney or fight. It just wasn't really worth it. And, I'm very lucky that I had a really good support system around me. My family is nearby and they were really, really supportive. And I had a really good network of friends. And, one of the things that I think happened with my fertility is that I retreated a lot. It was really hard to talk about and I didn't know what to say and how to really relate to people. So even though I was socializing, I was withdrawn at the same time. And, once the fertility treatment sort of stopped and it became more about marriage and divorce, I started talking probably because I couldn't contain myself anymore. But it's amazing, like the difference. And I think, I wish there was a way to like bridge that if I was, I wonder what would have happened if I was able to talk more, when I was going through my infertility, what that would have done for me in terms of my support. I mean, I certainly had support, but it feels very different now. While there's shame, I think in divorce sometimes there feels like there was something different about the infertility that it was just harder to talk about with other people.
Absolutely.
So it was well more isolating.
Yeah. Shelly, have you experienced any of this? I mean, I know that so Shelly is pregnant, which is wonderful. But I yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you.
After 2 rounds of IVF, which is, I mean, we're really excited. But I mean, you've talked, you and I have talked a little bit about relationships and
Yeah.
where things are at. But I don't know, have you experienced any of this or just any strain along the way or
You know, it's funny. I actually, when we knew that we were going to be talking about divorce and infertility, I was talking to my husband about that, and I was just saying, there's been a lot of people that we've seen lately that have been going through infertility for a while, and it's taken a toll on their marriage. It seems to be kind of like a very common natural thing almost. But we really, and I don't know why it is, but neither of us really feel this has been the hardest part of our journey together. We had some tough times in college, as we were growing, because we started dating when we were in high school, so
my
to
goodness.
date through college was like a major growth period for both of us, figuring out who we were as adults. And there were definitely some growing pains there and some tough times there. But we really, like, looking back over our relationship, feel like that was probably the hardest time. Definitely the times that threatened our being together the most, over what we've been going through the past few years. But I couldn't help but think, CDG, when you were talking, that when you were saying, I wonder if we would have resolved after the first IVF or the second IVF, or within a 2 or 3 year time frame, if that would have
Right.
helped. And I don't know what would be if we continued down this road for a long time. But for now, I mean, yeah.
I mean, there's certainly no way of knowing, and I, not to minimize what anyone goes through, I think that any infertility is awful, even if it's like one IUI. But I think eventually there just becomes like a compounded kind of thing where, we would have the same conversation over a number of years and nothing was getting easier and whatnot. So, but I think one of the things that I learned, especially recently, like looking backwards and also talking to people, is that I think that my husband and I were just never really on the same page. And I like just wanted that baby so badly that I don't know that I actually paid attention to that. And I
Never on
think
the
that's
same
one of
page in
the,
terms of what?
I think on the same page in general, certainly on the same page, about how we were going to continue our fertility journey. I was very much, wanting to do something like donor egg or adoption, and my ex-husband was very, against anything that wasn't both of our biologies.
Yeah.
But I think that, Over time, it was like a big wedge. We just were interacting very little with each other and kind of were cohabitating, but not necessarily interacting in a way a married couple should. And I think that I let the fertility become a blinder for myself and ignored a lot of those other things that were going on.
Right. And this is,
Actually,
oh, go ahead,
oh,
Shelley,
I was
please.
just going to say, you just reminded me that my husband and I did have one hard conversation right before we did our first IVF. I wanted to talk about kind of what the future was if IVF
Right.
didn't work. And I was like, let's look at adoption. Like, let's start that ball rolling. Like, I'm game. Like, I want to have a baby. Like, I want to do this. Like, and he was the exact same way as your ex. He was just he wasn't comfortable with the idea of adoption, and I don't know if he would have gotten to it. We kind of came to a place where I was like, all right, I just want to, you don't have to agree to it right now, but I just want to know that it's on the table, going into this IVF cycle. And he said okay. But like, that's one of the things where, like, if we had been going through this for a really long time, and cycle after cycle kept failing, that's a point that I think might have really been difficult for us.
All right. And what you're both bringing up, I think, is incredibly important, which is that you get into this mindset, and it's hard not to with fertility treatments and going through this entire process, whether you do treatment or whether you do decide to jump onto adoption or just, wait and see if something happens. You get in kind of this mindset of, just each cycle, something's going to happen. It's the next step. And it's easy to lose touch with one another because it's no longer just between the two of you. It's between the two of you. It's you two, and then all sorts of other people involved too.
Absolutely.
And I think it's so easy when you start bringing other people into your world in that manner to really lose touch with one another. And it doesn't happen overnight. If it was sudden and happened so quickly, I think a lot of people would notice and say, "Oh my God, we need to touch base more." But it's gradual enough that you miss it, and it's not long before, there was a period where I would come home and I would go downstairs and I would do my thing, and he would come home and, we would make dinner together, but then he would go upstairs and do his thing. And we didn't realize how destructive that was, how we were
Absolutely.
so separated from one another. And even though we were talking, we weren't really talking. And it's to be in the therapy and to actually have somebody sit there and help us be able to communicate with one another in a way. And I never would have thought that the simple act of having somebody sit down and catch you when you were saying things and saying, "This is what I'm hearing," or "I'm, you're saying this, but I think this is what you mean to say." And to be able to help mediate is really, especially during some of the harder conversations, was incredibly, incredibly worthwhile. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that I'm not sure if this is something that I talked about in my own therapy or just about for me being a therapist, but you think about life on a developmental spectrum, and I think that my husband and I sort of outgrew the single phase of our relationship. And clearly some couples are meant to not have children and they're really happy being just the two of them. But I think for us, like, once we decided we wanted kids, everything else sort of stopped. But then 5 years later, when there were no children, it was really hard to figure out, well, what are we supposed to do with each other? Like, what do we do on a Sunday afternoon? We're not going to the park with a bunch of kids. So, like, what's the option? And I don't think we ever figured it out, how to be just a couple versus a couple with children. So I think that was one of the things that we didn't really do enough of. I mean, we do things like we'd certainly like go out to dinner or go to the movies and things like that, but certainly not enough. And I think it's really easy to ignore that and not to put a time or effort or energy into like things you can do together. Like, even if it's as silly as like taking tennis lessons together, just so there's a common activity, it could just be so important to be touching base with somebody in that way that you don't do when on a regular basis.
Right, and something that's non-fertility related too. Yeah, so
Exactly.
it's it, even if it's as simply as, going to some place where there's only adults allowed, that there's no way that a baby or a couple with a baby would be allowed to be able to do that. Scheduling a date night that
Absolutely.
we recently went to a roller derby event. Yeah, there were kids there, but the reality is that it was mainly an adult entertainment show. So
Well,
I.
right. And if it's just like a shared experience that you guys could have together, I think that's, really, really important. And then back to what you were saying before with, I think Shelley was saying it, did you discuss it, if adoption was an option before IV, doing your IVF cycle? I think that was actually another issue I had is that I very much needed a safety net. I kept thinking in my head, if I knew that the donor egg or adoption was a plan B for us, I could feel more comfortable doing all these IVF cycles that were failing. And my ex-husband was the actual opposite. He didn't want to talk about it until we had to.
Exact
And
same as my husband.
we were coming at it from very different. He's like, why are we talking about this now? This is ridiculous. But so we were coming at it from extremely different places. And it's not that one is right or wrong. I mean, I certainly see the value in both. And it's just a different way of kind of coming at the world. But because we were coming at it differently, I think we never kind of got on that same page.
Right. And that's
But
hard because, because we've actually talked about here, having a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and a plan D, or at least getting up to plan C. Like, you're going to go in, this is what we're going to do, this is kind of what you're thinking your limits are going to be, and then you're going to sit down and reassess, and then from there go forward. But what you're saying is that if you have a partner, whether it be the guy that wants to do that and the girl doesn't, or the girl does and the other girl doesn't, or whatever, the point is that if your partner is not on board with it, that's really challenging. It really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I
And
mean, I always wanna
oh,
go
go ahead.
ahead.
Go ahead, Shelley.
I was just gonna say that I know we have talked on here a lot about, don't go into treatments unless you have, all these layers of plans. But it was something that, while I tried to do that, it was just kind of an impasse for us. And so it was easier and more peaceful, really, to just go forward and say, all right, well, this is what we're doing for now, and we know we have these different options, and we know we have to figure them out, but this is what we're doing for now. As much as I wanted to have more plans, because that's my nature, it wasn't possible to hash all those out without making it worse, almost.
I think I had a very similar situation. It was like I couldn't make my ex-husband do that, and he because he just wouldn't. It just like wasn't where his head was. And I know that one of the things that also worked against me was one of the things that would happen when I would go to my RE's office is they would always tell me, oh, you're still young. So I'm 37 now, and it started at an RE when I was probably about 32. So it wasn't so young, but it certainly was probably on the younger side of their patients. And they kept telling me, oh, you have time and don't worry about it. And you're still young. And, I think because it took a very long time for a doctor to say, okay, you're out of options. It kind of allowed my ex-husband to not have to have those conversations because it always was like, oh, when the doctor says we need to, then I'll think about it.
You're right.
So it was hard. But, in talking with some of, friends that I've met either through online communities or I have had a few close girlfriends just in my personal life who've gone through fertility treatments. And one of the things that I think that they experienced that I didn't was a sense that, no matter what happens, we're in this together and we'll figure it out. And I don't think I really felt that. And it took me a very long time to kind of accept that. But I just sort of think it was very much like, not a team effort in the way that it should be. And I think that may be a, not to, of course, like vilify my ex-husband, but that would be a big sign, I think, for other people or even for myself moving forward is when there's not that like team effort or team feeling that, that's when I think you need to really start reevaluating the marriage and really thinking about couples therapy and all of those kind of things.
This was actually something I wanted to talk about, which I'm thinking about our readers, our listeners who are hearing your story and maybe recognizing some of their own struggles in it. And I think there's probably going to be people at all different stages of the journey, but for those who are, seeing that there are problems and wanting to try to save things or fix things, what, we talked about couples therapy and the importance of starting early, but I'm just wondering what else we can talk about that might be helpful to them, whether it's things to look for or things to do.
I don't know if this is something that's possible for everybody, but I think that one of the things that let us at least sort of focus on each other or figure out how to like proceed in our marriage, which ultimately wasn't in a positive direction, but there was so much tension with fertility treatments that we really weren't able to like sort through things until we took a break. And I know that for some people that's not an option. And I understand that, and everyone needs to make their own decisions. But I think sort of just like putting a time out on fertility treatments for a few months while you can focus on the marriage again without all the other noise, I think would be really helpful. It certainly doesn't go away. I mean, when we started doing that, I thought about it on a daily basis, of course, but just the fact that we weren't doing cycles or timed intercourse or anything else was really helpful, just to really be able to put the focus back on the marriage for a little while, versus everything else all at the same time. It's just impossible to do it all
Yeah,
together.
I think this is fantastic advice, and I would say that even for couples that you, even if you are not suspecting that your marriage is in trouble, I can't begin to advocate for how important it is to take breaks. And I know it's scary to do because at the time you're in the groove and it's like, okay, that one didn't work. Let's go to the next one and let's just go. But you wear out. Just no way. I mean, even with the timed intercourse, granted, you're not having a doctor monitor you or other things like that, but
Well, it's almost worse.
it's almost worse. I mean, it completely takes over your sex life. So just, taking some time and just reassessing and doing things that don't require making a baby. I think it's important advice for everybody that
Absolutely.
regardless of where you are in this journey. So yeah, no, I agree with you.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we tried, our couples therapist actually suggested it. I think by the time we got there, it was like too, it was so far gone that it almost didn't matter. She actually asked us to talk about fertility stuff in a timed way. So literally like setting an egg timer and designate like 20 minutes a day to talk about fertility and then stop. So, and if there was still leftover, if we didn't finish a conversation, the idea was that, well, you have 20 minutes tomorrow, so hold on to it and we'll pick this up. This way it kind of contained itself into a little window rather than your whole world. For me, I think that we were so far gone that my ex-husband actually did a better job of containing himself. I was so crazy with it at that point in time that 20 minutes was certainly not enough time for me, and I couldn't do it. But in theory, or the times when we were able to do it, it actually worked quite well because it just, it just gave like this little reserved spot, and then once it was over, and you kind of try to move on and talk about something else for a brief period of time
Right,
too.
and we're doing that too. Originally, my therapist or our therapist suggested breaks from when we talked about it. The problem was, is I when he was talking about that, I looked at him. I'm like, I'm going to talk about it all the time, though. You don't understand. There's going to be like an hour where we don't talk about it, and the other 23 hours will be me talking about it. And so instead, having just that period where I know we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about it is good. And I agree with you. I mean, I still think about it. There's all the things that go through my head, but at least the madness is contained. So, and it's. It, and it's good because it allows me at least to be able to start thinking about other things in life again too.
Absolutely. The other thing I think was actually really helpful in my situation. So my ex-husband worked in a job where he usually went to work super early in the morning, and I actually had the opposite schedule. So he usually couldn't come to morning appointments with me because he had to be at work at like 7:15. It was just impossible. But there was one cycle where he was actually between jobs, and I say made him because he wasn't very happy about it, but I basically made him come with me to every single appointment. And I think it was actually really eye-opening because he came in the room for all the ultrasounds. He sat in the waiting room for every monitoring appointment. And I think that it helped him to really get a sense of how taxing it was and how anxiety-provoking and all the things that were going on. Because it's really easy. It was really easy for me to do it alone. Not that I liked it, but I just had this like, I'm going to be a warrior. I'm going to do this alone. It's fine. Don't worry. But that, I don't think that was actually a good thing. And once he was really involved, I think it actually helped his understanding of what this meant for me. So that might be something for people to play with too, if they can, just so that, as a woman, you're not taking on so much of that responsibility on yourself.
Right. And I'll say that that can come in many forms. So it can be them going to appointments with you, it can be them helping out with drugs.
Yes.
It can be, I mean, there's a lot of different things. And
Absolutely.
they'll most guys will rise to the challenge, and I think they actually feel like if they are doing something that they're somehow part of this. Otherwise, they can
Yeah.
feel really detached. So,
And maybe that's a sign too. I mean, I think that when I look back, my ex-husband was really eager to let me handle things on my own, and I had to do a lot of I say begging, but pleading or whatever to get him to be involved. And I think that's in retrospect probably a signal to me that something wasn't right. Yeah, I mean, that uninvolved partner is not really ideal. So if that's happening to people, I think that could be a signal that something isn't quite right.
all right. I think this is great advice all the way around,
Yeah.
regardless of whether where you are in your journey. I think it's
Yeah.
incredibly good. So
And it's interesting because I think people aren't really talking about like the marital issues as much. Once I started writing in my blog about marital problems or divorcing after fertility, I noticed there was like very few people in the community that were either saying it out loud or writing about it. And even if I Googled infertility and divorce, and like my blog was the only one that comes up. So, I think people are probably dealing with it. They're just not really talking about it so
No,
much.
and I think it's why that is that so divorce is taboo. It's not quite as taboo as infertility, but the two together is just, it's a fear. I mean, it's what people deal with the idea of that is the absolute worst thing that can happen is that you're
No question.
infertile, that and you'll be divorced, and then all of a sudden you're single and you're infertile and you have to go out and date again. Never mind the fact that in a lot of ways that may not be the worst thing that happens to you, because there are people who end up getting the baby and then are stuck in a marriage where they
Absolutely.
are really unhappy with their partner and cheating happens. And so are
Absolutely.
it just it can you can create your own private hell.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. One of the things I've been saying recently is that I have mostly married with child friends, married friends who have children. I have a few single friends, and a lot of them are really at this point wanting to get married and wanting those babies. And I'm in sort of this weird in-between spot, but it's funny to say the nice thing about knowing you're infertile because that sounds so wrong. But because I know that I can't really have biological children, it almost frees me up a little bit. I don't feel that like biological rush. So if I'm going to use donor egg or adopt, then I can wait and I don't feel this like urgency to find somebody else now and get married and have that baby. So it's kind of freed me up a little bit to just figure out what I'm doing with myself and get my life back on track and then kind of move into whatever the next phase is. But if I'm 38 or 39 or 40 or whatever, I don't know that it actually matters as much, now that I know that I'm not using my own eggs.
Right. And I have to say, I've been following you as you've been talking about dating and the adventures
Yeah.
in dating. And first off, bravo. That is, you've done so well. I
Thank you.
wish I was 20 reading your advice and taking it seriously, because there are so many 20-year-olds that, that do stupid things and freak out about things, and the way you're approaching it is so holistic. Like just the whole blog post you had about just going out and kissing guys to kiss guys and how wonderful that can actually be. It's like, yeah, that's right. That's very true.
Like reliving your adolescence somehow.
Exactly. But even talking about online dating and
Yeah.
I mean, we'll put that post up too about dealing with guys who had been married for such short periods in time, who had the audacity to sit down and pass judgment on you. I was rolling my eyes over that
Yeah,
one.
I mean, it's been a challenge, and I think that it's one of the things that I am a work in progress in figuring out, like, how, you know, when I meet somebody new, how I tell them that I'm infertile and when I tell them and how that all plays out. I mean, you know.
And in the long run, does it even matter? Because, I mean, yes, it matters on one end. I mean, this is something people should know about. But on the other end, I'm more worried about the guy that has been serial married and can't seem to stay in a long-term relationship. And it's like, what's wrong with you?
Absolutely. You know, I try to remember that the last time I was dating, I was like 27 and kind of young and fresh about it. And now it's 10 years later. And I think that anybody who's in their later 30s or 40s dating is going to have relationship baggage. And if they don't, then there's probably something wrong. So, you know, life is just much more complicated. And I think that, you know, I know now more what I'm looking for, and kind of, you know, I think I'm looking for a unique person who would be very open-minded in the ways of, like, third-party reproduction. And, you know, if somebody isn't, then they're definitely not the right person for me. So it's kind of nice that I know that, and I know that that's my deal breaker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whenever that kind of comes about, I feel really strongly that that's, you know, that's where I stand with things.
Right. So the one thing I did want to ask you about is you were offered two donor embryos.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that at all?
I can talk about it a little bit. I'm still in contact with the family, so I don't want to, like, breach anyone's confidentiality. But
no,
one of the amazing things about this community is just, as we all kind of know, this is miraculous, strange encounters that happen. And, you know, this woman who had asked me for years and years if I wanted her embryos. She had embryos left over from a donor cycle. And at the time that she first contacted me, I was like, well, first I thought this was the weirdest thing I had ever heard of, even though it's an amazing thing. But I knew that my husband at the time was not interested in that, and we were still doing IVF. And I kept telling her no, and she kept approaching me. And then sometimes, I don't know why she kept being persistent, because I rejected her a lot. But sometime in the summer, which I think was probably around when my ex-husband was getting ready to move out of our apartment, I would say it was one of the darker periods of my life, she contacted me again, and I said, you know, I think I'm interested in this. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, there's two embryos that we're kind of still thinking about it and still talking about it. I think that I don't have a timeline for being ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think initially I felt very strongly that I'm going to get divorced and I'm going to have a baby right away. Mm-hmm. And then I realized how complicated getting divorced is and how emotional of a process that is. And so at this point in time, I'm kind of trying to, like, emotionally get my head back together and figure out what it would mean to be a single mother financially and all of that stuff. But, you know, it's so nice to know that that's out there as an option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially I think, you know, how challenging it might be to do a traditional adoption as a single mother, to have that to know that an embryo adoption is also something is remarkable. And I, you know, I think this whole infertility community just continues to amaze me in ways that, you know, just all the women that you meet are just incredible, and it's amazing the opportunities and the friendships that get formed.
Yeah. I still remember you telling that story and cheering for you the whole way. And I mean, even if that is something you choose not to do, just the fact that that is an option on the table, and
yeah,
it's just wonderful. And I had to laugh too, because you emphasized she kept pursuing me. Like, no, this is really meant. these
it
two
was
are
so
meant for
funny.
You.
Like, I don't know. It was, yeah. But I think that was one of the things that was so hard to hold on to by the end of my journey, is like a sense of hopefulness. And and I know that that is something a lot of us struggle with. Like, how do you stay hopeful when things are falling apart? And you know, the last few years have been very difficult to tap into hope. And I think sometimes I think about those embryos. I actually have a picture of the baby that was born from, you know, that set of embryos. And I'll look at it and think, like, okay, this is what it's about, and like this is how you tap into hope, and kind of just knowing that being, I don't know when I'll be a mother, I don't exactly know how, but that is something I don't have to give up on. That I, you know, gives me a lot of comfort just to have that as a hope for my future.
Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you, well, first, it's been a pleasure to have you on today. It's been a lot of fun to
Thank
talk to you, and I
you.
think everything you've said is huge. But also, just your blog has been amazing to follow. I'm still married. We're still on this journey. We're still figuring things out along the way. But even with that, I mean, to see that, and this is not to sound down by any means, but to see the worst case scenario and to see that, you know, actually, it's not that bad if you can choose to sit down and really move forward with it. And to actually
Absolutely.
see that it's everything that we've been taught to fear is only as painful as we choose to make it. And in the end, it can actually be this amazing transition. It's been, I mean, your blog has been such an inspiration.
Oh,
And I know that, so there's been other bloggers, Shelley mentioned it, like there's one, Tootie from Submerge, and she's going through a similar situation now. And I know that she and I have talked extensively, and she said, and one of the things she said is that being able to go out and find information like this as she's going through these transitions has been huge. And
yeah.
so I encourage you, keep writing, please,
Oh,
because it's
thank
just,
you. You
it's.
know, it's something I've been grappling with because I know I don't really traditionally fit in anymore, that I'm not actively pursuing treatments and I'm now getting divorced. But, you know, I think that I've been sadly, even though it didn't always feel sad to me, the worst case scenario for a while, just in terms of how many cycles I've done and then the marriage falling apart and losing a baby in a second trimester. There's just so many things that I'm like, I know that I am representing what people fear most. But one of the things that I've learned, which I try really hard to hold on to, and sometimes I'm better at it than others, is that the anticipation is always the worst. That I remember thinking that, you know, when I knew I was losing the baby, that this was going to be it. Like, I'm going to like die after this. I can't go through this. Or my ex-husband was moving out, that there was no way I was going to be able to like pick myself up and move on. And like, somehow you do it. It's not pretty, but you do it. And I think that anticipating it is just always, at least for me, so much worse than the actual experience. You know, people are remarkably resilient, and you figure out a way to just get through it, you know, somehow.
Right. And even with those worst case scenarios, the fact is that sometimes it's not to minimize the pain of those experiences by any means, but sometimes it's just amazing to see what comes out of it
Absolutely.
versus like choosing to carry a pregnancy. Obviously nobody has control over, over whether or not the pregnancy is going to stick or not, but definitely your responses to what you want in relationships, what you need along the way, and choosing to stand up for yourself and say, this is what I need in order to really be happy and healthy, and being brave enough to do that. Because there's still this thought that if you're alone, you're going to be unhappy. And the reality is there's so many people that are in relationships who are really unhappy, and so
Yeah.
many people out there who are single who leave really full and fulfilled
Absolutely.
lives. So it's changing the way we think about things yet again.
Absolutely. And I think it's lonelier to be in a lonely relationship than to actually be alone. But there are nights when I feel lonely in my apartment now that I'm living by myself. But it actually was well worse when I was feeling lonely and yet there was somebody sitting next to me in the living room. Because that just was, you know, it
There's
just
the
was
anxiety with
amplified.
that. Yeah,
Yeah.
just sitting next to that
Absolutely.
person, not knowing what to do, not knowing to say anything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it can be really bad in a lot of ways. So
Absolutely.
yeah, no, I agree with you. I think your story, even though it seems unique because you write about it, I don't think it is quite as unique as everybody would like it to believe.
Yeah,
So
I mean, I know
thank
one of
you.
the places that I found a lot of support recently has been on Twitter. There's been a lot of, you know, recently separated or divorced women who also had fertility histories. So, you know, and even just the infertility community that's on there. So I encourage people to sign up for that as well. It's just sort of a nice quick way to get support.
Great,
You
great.
sound like you're in such a good place.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It comes and goes, but right now, you know, Not so bad right now.
Can I say
That's
it
great.
comes and goes in general for the rest of us too?
That's true.
Depending upon
Yeah.
where we're at. So it's a but I agree with Shelley. I think it's been great, really great to have you on today.
Thank you. I
Yeah.
appreciate it. Thank you for having
Yeah,
me.
of course. All right. So what we'll do is we'll link up CDG's blog for those of you. We'll have a link on our website, and then also we'll put up some resources as far as what we've been talking about today with the Resolve website as far as finding therapists, both individual therapists as well as some of these therapists do couples counseling, and then we'll. I think there's a few other links that we can link to too. But thank you again. Thank you so much for coming on today, CDG,
Thank you. My pleasure.
and I wish you so nothing but the best and so much luck as you can continue forward in this journey, whatever may be the outcome.
Exactly. Thank you. Same to you guys.
Thank you so much. So this week's so that once again we'll put up links for CDG's blog as well as other links that we talked about. But we don't want to end today without giving an old-fashioned rant. And Shelley, you sent me this link that I swear I've rolled my eyes so hard that I actually couldn't see for probably about a good 2 minutes afterwards.
Okay. So, I mean, everybody knows how, I mean, I think you'd have to be living in a cave at this point to not know that Jessica Simpson got knocked up again, like, immediately after giving birth. I mean, I was trying to do the math. I can't even imagine that it was more than 8 weeks after
So
she gave
when
birth
no we
that
didn't
she got
so
knocked up
so
again,
when did she get
which,
she gave birth in
whatever.
May she gave birth in
It
May but
happens. But
well but wait a
the
minute
thing
she
that irked me was I saw a quote from her recent appearance on Jay Leno. Should I just read this?
Yes.
So horrible. Okay, so this is Jessica speaking. Apparently, it was part of God's plan for my life. I was extremely shocked. I was shocked because I was going through a lot of hormonal changes trying to get back to the old, vibrant Jessica. And you know, it was kind of like a one-night stand, and it happened all over again. We've had two different wedding dates, but he keeps knocking me up. I'm doing it very backwards, I know. I'll just keep my legs crossed this time.
Yeah.
End
Yeah.
quote.
End quote. So how far along is she? Is she
I
3 months
don't, I think
pregnant?
she must be like 6 months or something.
Is she?
She's, yeah.
See, now I gotta check that because I thought the thing that she is pregnant abnormally fast for somebody who has given birth.
Like, yeah, like I didn't even think you could be having sex like that soon after a vaginal birth.
Yeah, let's see here. How many months? Yeah, we need to look on that. I think the thing is that she is probably, I think she's nearing the end of her first trimester. So I don't know if it was
No,
really.
she's like way showing.
Oh, is she way showing? Oh, wow. So then she's actually further along than what we were expecting. Okay. Never mind. But yeah, I agree with you. So the whole bringing in God's will
Yeah, that's like a whole can of worms right
It
there.
is. And then the other thing that I was thinking about, and it dawned on me because she actually is going to be promoting a show. She's promoting a show that she's going to do, starring her and then having actors that look like her, basically her baby daddy, because he's not really even a fiance at this point in time. But her
Yeah.
dad, too. And didn't her dad get into trouble recently? Like he's going through a divorce, and there was something about the fact that he was in trouble for sexually soliciting a bunch of young boys. So,
Oh God, I didn't hear that. I mean, he's a killer, but
yeah, I know he's a little bit weird, and so part of me wonders too if this is just, they've decided Joe Simpson's in trouble, so let the older dumb blonde, which she is, go out and talk about the fact that she has no problems getting pregnant whatsoever. But it's maddening. It's absolutely
it's
maddening.
well, it's just like this flippant like attitude about this extreme fertility, and I mean, what is a huge blessing, you know? I mean, I know that she's not the kind of person that we should exactly expect to be sensitive to the plight of infertiles, but I mean, just like, oh, I just need to keep my legs crossed, and it was a one-night stand with her fiance. Like, what are you talking about? I don't know. Her flippant attitude toward her extreme fertility is just maddening, even though I wouldn't expect much more of her. It's just annoying.
No, well, I mean, I think the thing that's hard, and this is kind of what we were getting at last week with the whole news from Kim Kardashian, is that you know for a fact that the whole point behind this is to raise publicity to market herself. And she is not what I consider one of the leading examples as far as motherhood out there. I mean, yes, I have no idea what type of mother she is. I really don't. But what I do know is that she is foremost, since the time that she's announced her first pregnancy, immediately signed a deal with Weight Watchers, immediately turned around and was selling her baby pictures, was on every single talk show you can imagine, like, and worked that market on no end. And then the reason people follow her is she says the most ludicrous things. And it's kind of like back when she was first married to her first husband, she would do this stuff too. And where she got quiet was when she got divorced.
Right.
It's ironic that we're talking about divorce in this context. But on her end, I really do think that it's just the Hollywood circuit where they name brand everything and they sell everything about their lives, and that's how they make their livelihood. And the Simpson family has been notorious about this because they've done this with both of their daughters, and they most certainly will do this with their kids. So to
But they
have,
don't have, it doesn't have to be like that, though. I mean,
right.
there's plenty of celebrities out there who don't do that.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, who you're like, oh my gosh, they have three kids. Like, I had no idea. They don't talk about them. They don't push them in front of the cameras. I mean, even a good example these days is Adele had a son recently, and she's not even revealing his name, let alone showing anyone any pictures of her. And it's that kind of mama bear instinct that I love to see. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a I wish more people took a page out of that book. As much fun as it is to follow celebrity pregnancies and see what kind of crazy names they give their kids and all that kind of stuff, there's something kind of gross about it and almost unnatural.
Right. Well, I think part of it has to do with what type of celebrity they are. And I think you'd hit the nail on the head. If we're talking about Adele is a singer. Her livelihood comes from her voice. There's no reason for her to advertise her pregnancy whatsoever.
Yeah,
Jessica
more
Simpson.
the reality-based
Yeah. I
stars.
mean, Jessica Simpson, she was a singer years ago, but what shot her into popularity was when her dad signed her and her first husband up for a reality show. That's what made her famous. So she's used to putting everything out there and doing that. Kim Kardashian is the exact same way, puts everything out there.
Snooki.
Snooki's the same way. I mean, I think it's a different type of celeb, whereas you see like celebrities where their livelihood, they can basically separate their personal lives and choose to do that. I think they will also be very different as far as how they deal with parenthood. So, like, I think who just recently gave birth? I think Claire Danes just recently gave birth.
She
And
did.
yeah, and I think is really, kept things rather under wraps. I don't know if she's
Totally.
really talked about it. So, I mean, it's frustrating, but to hear the idea of I'm so blessed, you're not.
Yeah.
And the other idea of, I would get married, but he keeps knocking me up. It made me think about the fact that, it's almost like they're advertising, well, for all you infertiles out there, it's just because you're doing it wrong. So,
Right.
what you
Why
should
don't you
do.
uncross your legs?
So, not only that, but you need to believe in God. It's because you don't believe in God that you're infertile. And even if you are a Christian, you're not believing in God the right way. And it's you shouldn't be married. You should either be cheating on your husband with somebody else, or you need to just divorce him. And then, because baby daddy is the way of being able to be able to conceive. It's
Or maybe
not
you just need
actually
a one-night stand.
right, exactly. So I mean, the whole idea of being with a guy who's actually going to be a father, who's going to take care of the kids, who's, going to be more than just that, he's going to be a partner for you. I mean, screw that. You just want to find somebody who is going to knock you up and leave you, because that's a genuine way to be able to secure that you'll be able to conceive. And then to just sit down and, I mean, she's notorious for making statements like this. And part of it is, unfortunately, she really epitomizes the dumb blonde routine all the way, and I think she markets it. But the other thing is, I kind of believe she believes it based on her upbringing with her parents, because what they haven't talked about this entire time is that her parents are going through a very nasty divorce. And there's no way that they are going to talk about it until it's done, and then even then it will be done very quietly. The other person you don't hear about is Ashley. Like, where is she in all this?
Yeah, I mean, she's someone who, I guess we would say has a sort of similar trajectory to Jessica. I mean, she was part of a reality show at one point too, but she didn't try to capitalize on her pregnancy nearly as much.
No, I mean they she got married, she had a baby. There were some things that were put out about her husband at the time, liking breast milk and other things along those lines, which are a little over the top. But she got divorced, and it's like she's completely fallen off the face of the earth.
I know.
So
Well, I mean, maybe that says something about how their family views divorce, and I don't know.
yeah. So, anyways, yeah, I agree with you. It's annoying.
Yeah, I mean, what else can we say besides it's really freaking annoying?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just had to point that out.
No, it's, well, I think it's good because it's the thing that constantly comes across when you're dealing with infertility or loss is this whole idea of one being cursed. And somehow, I mean, I went through this. I still go through this. How, did I bring this on myself in some way because of who I am and me being a bad person? So
Sure.
it's hard not to hear a statement like that, and it's like taking the knife and twisting it a
Right.
lot to, especially and looking at somebody who, I mean, if we're really looking on the level of deserving, I mean, come on. How can you tell me that this person deserves it more than somebody that's completely got their lives together and could be able to provide a stable home for a child? But
Right.
that's what she's implying. So
Right. Not intentionally. I really don't believe intentionally, but it doesn't make it hurt any less.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I do. Oh, so on that note, we're going to wrap things up for today. But please email us at bitterinfertiles@gmail.com. Visit our website at bitterinfertiles.wordpress.com, or follow us on Twitter, which is bitterinfertile, no S. Comments, write us, follow us. You love us. And again, Mo will be back next week and we'll pick up from there. So we'll see you all later.
Okay,
Bye.
bye everyone.